So my name tag has already fallen off about 10 times. Here's what we're going to do. Let's see if I have better luck with that. So if it falls off again, I'm just going to leave it. I'm not going to keep fixing it, but hopefully you all recognize who I am now. My name is Justine. I do live in Woodville, and I want to say thank you very much for having me come and speak today. A little bit more about myself. Yes, no children, but we do have our fur baby. Outside of officiating hockey, which is probably more what you could consider my passion, I lead a really boring life. I like to garden, I like to bake. In the summertime, I don't like to go out much, mostly because this world takes me everywhere throughout the winter, and I really like my summers to have some downtime. This doesn't pay the bills. I also have a full-time job that I do on top of my officiating ice hockey. So I am a police officer. So I work shift work. I'm fortunate. Right now I'm not on night. Really nice not being on night. But it's busy. And I'm very lucky. I'll say who my employer is. And I'd like to give them a shout out because they are very supportive of what I do, including my supervisors, my co-workers, it's York Regional Police. Yeah. Really good employer. But I do like to joke that I'm stuck with the punishment. And I don't know if you've noticed, officiating police officers, we're not really popular. So I like to say I'm a sucker for punishment because I go to work and nobody likes me. And then I go to hockey and nobody likes me. It's what I do. I've gotten very comfortable maybe not always being on the friendly side of everyone, but I do really love both roles. And I find that there is a lot of similarities between the two. They actually do a really nice job of reflecting each other. And I can take my strengths and my challenges from both and apply them on both my career and my passion. So I'm very lucky in what I do. Before I even get started about officiating, I want to talk a little bit about women's hockey. And this is something I've been talking about for years. I love talking about women's hockey. But for many people, maybe until this year, it wasn't really something on your radar. The PWHL. Have we all heard about the PWHL? Yeah. We'll get to that. We'll get there. But let's rewind in time just to get an idea of how hockey has grown in the province. Female hockey has been around for over a century. It's been around a long time in one shape or form or another. But in 1990 in Ottawa, we actually had the first women's world. So, I might cringe when I say this because it's not my cup of tea, but you might remember those worlds because of the very clever marketing ploy of the pink jerseys. Anyone remember pink jerseys?
No.
So, most people, when I bring up this championship, I'm like, oh yeah, the pink jerseys. Yes, the pink jerseys. But it worked because people paid attention. So in 1990, we have a female organization in Ontario called the Ontario Women's Hockey Association. It's a mouthful, so we call it the OWHA, or the OW for short. And what's neat about the OW is that we are a female hockey organization for the entire province that only governs female hockey. We are the only female organization in the world that does that. So if we go to our neighbor in Quebec, Hockey Quebec, Hockey Quebec is all of the hockey in Quebec, male and female. In Ontario, we have multiple different organizations. Here locally is the OMHA, the Ontario Minor Hockey Association. But we don't fall under that. We fall under a women's organization. So that's women advocating for women and female hockey. And that's what makes it special. So in 1990, the OWHA had just under 5,000 registered players. Yeah, not too bad, 1990. Yeah. And by registered, I'm not including the females that were playing for their respective boys' organizations. They're not included in these numbers. Or maybe a senior woman who played just for fun on the weekend. So our registered players in other leagues or our unsanctioned players are not included in this number. So it's probably a little bit higher if we want to look at it that way. So the OW has only released the statistics up to 2019-20. COVID seems to have put a halt on that. So I can only speak to, in 30 years, it jumps to almost 38,000 female registered players in the province. And it is guaranteed higher if we want to factor in our females that are playing male hockey or our older women who are playing unsanctioned hockey for fun. So female hockey in the province has been and continues to be a booming business. It is a popular sport among our young female girls, which is a positive because I know what it's done for me. I know the confidence it's given me, the opportunities it's provided me with, and I know that that's exactly what it's doing for those young females as well. And we know any team sport is a great sport to be involved in, any sport is a great sport to be involved in. And that's what it's doing for these young females. Let's take a look at the officials. Now, I am going to do a little side note about the officials because in the province, there's just under 1,300 in 2019-20. This is in the OWHA. There's many more officials than that in the province. We're talking about just female officials that have registered in a female game. And of those almost 1,300, 439 were females. We are constantly looking to get that number up. We want more female ring officials in the game, period. Not just in female hockey, we want female officials in the game. They're good at what they do. So we struggle. And here's my little side note about officiating. The COVID pandemic, it's been a challenge for us with game officials. We lost a lot of game officials, especially at the minor level. I think people realize, hey, it's nice to be at home on my weekend. And it's really nice not going to the arena and being yelled at. Really, truly, honestly. By the way, I want to go to the rink just to be verbally abused. We lost a lot of officials who didn't come back. And if anyone here is involved currently in minor hockey, or if you have family or friends, you will know the number of games that have been canceled in this area this year because there are not enough game officials. It's a great part-time job for a youth. It's a great hobby for an adult. You get out, you get some exercise, you're mentally challenged, you're physically challenged. I'll say it, you're emotionally challenged on the ice as well. You get to meet people, you build social connections. So if you're talking to people and it's something that they are considering, we are always looking for game officials. Come and try it. Because we have a lot of people that come and try, and they don't stay in it. And that's what actually happened to me when I was 12 years old. I tried it out, my parents planted the seed, and I didn't like it. I didn't like going to the rink and being yelled at. So, what drew me to women's officiating? Why did I want to become an official then? If at 12, I was like, nope, this ain't my cup of tea. I don't like it. I played in Ottawa growing up, only competitive organization in Eastern Ontario at that time. We had to go to Toronto to find other teams to play against. This is back in the 90s. And in 2002 to 2007, I played for the University of Toronto Varsity Blues. So I played up my 5 years of eligibility. And in that time, I could probably count on one hand how many female game officials I saw officiating our women's hockey games. And I want to see reflection in the game of me. I want to see those female game officials. But there weren't many then at that time. So when I stopped playing, the question's always, well, what are you going to do next? I didn't really want to play competitively anymore, but yet I love competitive sport. I didn't really want to coach. Wasn't really something that I was much interested in. But I thought, oh, that seed my parents planted when I was 12, that's what I want to do. I want to officiate at the university level because I want to see female officials on the ice officiating female hockey. That was important to me. So that's why I started officiating. That's how I became one of these females. And I had no idea that it would lead me to where I am today, even speaking to you about female officiating, or that it would take me halfway across the world multiple times over. I had no clue that officiating had those opportunities. I just wanted to see more females in the game. I thought it was a good way to stay involved in the game. But I learned very quickly it was so much more than that. So I will talk about how we compete as a game official, because that's probably one of our biggest misconceptions. I went to the Olympics. When I was selected for the Olympics, people would say, oh, that's so neat. Did you volunteer for that? I'm like, no, I had to work really hard for many years. I had to compete against the other game officials to be selected to go to the Olympics. And that's when I realized there's a very large disconnect between players, coaches, and officiating. We know that the coaches compete for those top positions. We know that the players are definitely competing to be the top in the game. But we don't know always about the game officials. And quite frankly, that's probably a good thing, because, and Sal will probably agree, when we're invisible on the ice, that's probably a good game for us. When we don't get noticed, that's a good hockey game. We don't want to be noticed, right? So that was part of my journey of what has brought me to where I am now, and my game of the shade. So before I go on a little bit more as to how you compete as an official and how you get to that level, right, that was a bit of a learning process for me as well as I went through all the different stages through the year. I want to talk a little bit about women's hockey before I even get there. Who here has watched the PWHL on TV? Quite a few hands. Has anyone had the good fortune of seeing a game live? Correct. Bruce, you're bang on. You cannot get a ticket to the women's game. The Toronto team, which would be your closest team, was sold out before they dropped the puck for game one on January 1st. They had one game that they moved from the Mattamy Center, which is located at the Toronto Metropolitan University, formerly Ryerson. They moved one game to where the Maple Leafs play. It sold out within minutes. I had people messaging me, how do I get tickets? I can't get tickets. Minutes. It sold out. This sport is popular. It's popular amongst our boys, but it's been equally popular for a long time amongst our girls. It was just getting it off the ground and getting it the attention that it deserved. So, I have wrapped in three different women's professional leagues, and I can honestly say that the PWHL is probably the most, it feels like a professional league, for lack of a better term. It feels professional. But from 2007, and this is going to get confusing, and I apologize now, because it is, but from 2007 to 2019, we had the Canadian Women's Hockey League. It folded in 2018. You won't be surprised to hear why. Budget. Money. Money. Very hard to get the money behind the game. When this league started, women were not being paid. They were lucky if they were getting equipment. They were working full-time jobs, playing professional hockey. Not much different than if you look way back before the National Hockey League and what the men did as well, prior to their having such great success as they have now. So while this league was in existence, a second women's professional league decided, hey, we want to create our own women's professional league because we're not really on board with how they're running their league. And that was called originally the NWHL, the National Women's Hockey League, and then they turned it into the Premier Hockey Federation. So these two leagues, this was founded in 2015. It actually ended just this past season. The PWHL and the PHF were actually two women's professional leagues that were working at the same time. They both had the same end goal, professional hockey, but they both had vastly different routes, pathways that they were taking to get there. And they couldn't get on the same page. So we had two different professional leagues. Of course, the CWHL closed down in 2018. They formed themselves as the PWHPA, given that mouthful, the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association. You might have heard of the Dreamcap Tour. That's what their league represented. This is where all of our national team players play, Canada and US, including some females from overseas as well. And they created this because, again, they still weren't buying into the PHF. They didn't want to be part of this league. So, again, same end goal, two very different pathways. Until, and just to give you a better idea, right, we can see that we have some leagues running at the same time. Women's professional hockey is not new. The PHF was paying players. Last season, they had a player that was being paid $100,000. Yeah. They had two players up over $100,000, Grant Mantis and Dana Watt. They were being paid a lot of money in that league, but it folded to create what's now known as the PWHL. So finally, those two different pathways, they got on the same page, they were able to align, and they created their own league. This league is owned by one owner, the owner of the Dodgers. He owns the entire league. The NHL is not subsidizing this league, and that's a bit of a misconception. So the NHL is not financially putting any backing into this league. They have provided a lot of support and knowledge, logistics, administrative, the behind the scenes of how to make a professional league work, That's where they've provided a lot of support to this league. I am lucky. I've also had the opportunity to referee in this league. In fact, I leave tonight. I fly out tonight to Minnesota because I'm on the ice tomorrow night in Minnesota in St. Paul to referee another game tomorrow. And this league is a professional league. You can feel it the moment that you walk into the ring. From the security, the setup, how the players are being treated. But let's talk about broadcasting. The reason why when I threw a hand up and said, hey, how many people have watched a game? It's because finally they have regular, at mainstream times, broadcasting of the game that we never had prior to this in any other women's professional league. And that's important. If we want to show the game, it needs to be seen. And to be seen, it needs to be regularly on TV in the same time slot as that male game. And that's what you're seeing, the big difference between the previous professional leagues and what we have now. They finally have that league that these women have worked towards. I will say they've always been professional athletes in my eyes, and it's nice that they finally have a league that reflects that. Because these women are incredible. Some of them have young children. They're traveling while breastfeeding. Kendall Coyne is still breastfeeding her child, and she's one of the top players in the league. So that child travels with her. So that way she can continue to compete. She's also the captain of Team USA. It varies between her and Hillary Knight. She has to take some time off to have a child, and now the child goes with her. So that's how she manages being both a mom and a professional athlete. Incredible. I don't have children, and I don't have children because I don't know where I'd find the time. And yet these women are finding the time. And many of the female game officials that I work with at this level have children. And I just find it astounding that they're able to manage having a family, being a mom, working a full-time job, because we all have to work full-time jobs, because this is, although it does not pay enough to make a living, and manage being a mom. And there's players that are doing that too, Natalie Spooner as well. Pretty incredible world. So, a little bit about women's hockey, let's talk about officiating and how you get from refereeing your local hockey here, maybe with the Lindsay Lynx, or maybe with the Rusty, and then being able to work your way up to an international level. I'm going to talk about this through a female lens, because although I started officiating male hockey last year, I'm very late to the male hockey game, I went through my progression as a female game official in the amateur game. For the male amateur game, so for male officials that are working towards the IHF, which is the International Ice Hockey Federation, it would be a similar process, although I'm sure there are some differences that I cannot speak to, because I've never done it. And the NHL, well, that's a totally different process. As to how they pick their game officials for the NHL, they have their own process as well, and it's different than the amateur route. So, like I said before, you start at your provincial level. So I started refereeing when I finished playing in 2007 to 2008. You have to be recognized in your local center that, hey, this person, they're not half bad, they're pretty good. And then your local area supervisor, we now call them coaches, but it gets a little bit confusing, but your local area supervisors recommend you into a provincial championship. So for me, it was the Ontario Winter Games in my third season. I was recommended to that championship. I am a lines person. That's all I do. I do not band. So for those in the room who know hockey, you know exactly what I'm talking about. For those in the room who don't come from a hockey background, that means that on the ice, if you've ever noticed, we have different jerseys. The referees have a red band or an orange band on their sleeve. The linesmen do not. So what I do is I call a lot of those offsides and icing. There's a lot of things I can call outside that, but that's generally what most people think of when they think of the lines person. Whereas the referees are calling the penalties. And we have different roles on the ice, and we have different things that we do. I am a line. That's what I do on the ice. So I go to my first Ontario Winter Games. There was 8 lines there, so 8 from across the province, and you have to perform. So when you go to a provincial championship, you want to perform well, and you want to be recommended, of course, to the next level. Every game is supervised. Every game you get feedback. If you go to a championship and you have a bad championship and you don't perform well and you can't handle the pressure, then chances are you're just not getting invited back. And typically, you get one championship a year to prove yourself. That's it. One.
So if you have one championship a year and you don't perform well, you might not get another chance. And I've seen it happen. I've seen women who have come to championships at varying levels, and I've never seen them again. And they didn't have a strong showing. So it's not much different from the athletes. But the athletes get to prove themselves all year. We get that one championship of the year to prove ourselves. So I was ranked at the provincial level, and once you get ranked high enough, and of course you never know your ranking. This is done by people and behind closed doors. Right? But you're working towards getting a high enough ranking that they recommend you to your national body. And with that, Hockey Canada. And you start over, all over again. You get recommended to Hockey Canada. They put you into a lower level national championship. Most often it's 8 to 10 line persons from across Canada that are being sent to these championships. So there's not a lot of us. That's a lot of females from across the country that you're competing against just to get there. You're supervised every game, you're given feedback, you need to perform. Your goal is to always get a medal game. Like, you want that gold and bronze medal game just like the athletes do. And at the end, you get a nice little report card that says, hey, you did a good job, or these are the things you need to work on. And much like the provincial, you're right. And what you're hoping is, I had a good enough championship that I'm going to get invited back next year. So you get, in most situations, one championship a year at a higher level of national championship, a higher level of hockey that's more challenging. And you do the process all over again. And you best do it well, because that might be the only chance that you get. Within the national body, eventually you're ranked, and you're hoping to get recommended into the international, which is the IHF. The International Ice Hockey Federation. And you do the whole same thing over again. So you can see how this would take many, many years to work your way to the top when you have one championship a year to sell yourself in, right? So the IHF, again, my first championship was in Mexico City. Yeah, they have hockey in Mexico. The rink was actually really nice. A tad bit warm, I'm not going to lie. But it was a nice hockey arena. But again, okay, maybe the hockey wasn't very strong. It was validation hockey at the IHF level. But I still have to prove that I deserve to be there. And in fact, I want to do even better than that. I want to move up to a higher level championship the next year. And the IHF is a little bit different. You do get a full report card from them at the end of the season. You do not get to know your rankings within the IHF. But they use an error system. So at the end of the season, you either get an error up saying, yes, this official is good, we recommend to a higher championship, bring that. An error to the side that says, they did okay. They can come back at this level, but we don't recommend that they move any higher than that. And then you can get an arrow down on your report card. Yeah, all right. That either says, this is too much, or we don't want them back. For one reason or another. And they watch everything you do, not just on the ice. They're watching us off the ice as well. They know when we're being good teammates. They know when we're being good people. And as we've seen game officials, very good game officials, be removed from the international program because they're not nice people. So it is a team. Even though my teammates change with every game, we are still a team. And if you don't have somebody on the team, or if you have somebody on the team who's not a good teammate, they don't want you. So they're watching all aspects of your game. And again, you want those bronze and gold medal games, just like the athletes do. And every year you want to go to a higher ranked championship. So I was really lucky. I was able to get to my first Women's World, 2017. That was my first Women's World, so that was in Plymouth, Michigan. I had a good showing at that tournament. I was able to win a bronze medal game. At that time, we were not allowed to referee our own country. They changed that now in the IHF. They just want the best officials, period. They don't care what country you represent. But at that time, I was not allowed to referee Canada in any game other than exhibition outside of international competition. So I couldn't referee the gold medal game. Because we all know about the rivalry between Canada and USA, right? If you don't, tune in one day when you get to watch a game between those ladies. And in fact, at the end here, I'll tell you when and where you can tune in for the next games that are going to be between them. I want to work those games, but I couldn't because I was Canadian, so I got the bronze medal game instead. But that's since changed. And 2017 is what was leading into the 2018 Olympics, and that ultimately was my goal. I wanted to represent Canada, because you do, even though we're impartial, you still represent your country at the Olympics.
And also, obviously, until more recently, that was the highest that we could go in women's hockey.
There was no male hockey available to us at a higher level.
The best that we could do was the Olympics,
and that comes once every 4 years.
Right.
So you have to go to championships. Our fitness testing was hosted every year in Europe. I go to Switzerland to do my fitness testing. So
yeah, like they're looking at everything with you. They're looking at your level of fitness, your rule knowledge, your in-class sessions, your on-the-ice performance, your off-the-ice performance,
your game management, how you react under pressure. Are you a consistent official? Are you not? There's a lot of factors that they go into selecting who's going to be going to the Olympics. And that's why I say we compete. This is not volunteer. I don't decide to be away from my husband a lot during the winter. I volunteer. I do it because I'm passionate about it, and it allows me to compete in the sport that I love, which is officiating. So, I don't think it's a big secret now, but I did have the good fortune. Unless you can dream it, you can do it. I had the good fortune of going to the Pyeongchang 2018 Olympics. And it doesn't matter. You can come back and be like, what happened in this game at this tournament? Unless it was something hugely significant. I never remember the games and what happened in them. I remember what happened, what had a feeling attached to it, or the woman that I spent time with. The fun things that we did outside the game. I love the game, but it's not where my memories are. But I will talk about one game that I do remember from the Olympics, because it had great significance outside of the game of hockey. So these Olympics were in Korea. I think we're all well aware of North and South Korea and how strong or not strong of a relationship that they have. And what is interesting about these Olympics is the Korean Olympics, their team was a mixture of North and South Korean athletes. So for figure skating, North and South Korean athletes, but they were no team. But the only team sport that actually mixed the two was women's hockey. So on the bench you had, working as teammates, maybe working on a line together, North and South Korean players. It was the only sport to do that at the Olympics. We didn't really understand the significance of this. You can't hear what's being said on the media. You can't read what's being read in the newspaper. So you don't really understand how important, what meaning that this has for the two countries, especially South Korea. So I got the first home opener, South Korea versus Sweden. We know it's going to be a blowout. It's South Korea, they're there in the Olympics because they're hosting. They are not a strong hockey country. It's going to be a blowout against Sweden. We're driving to the arena, and when you're in the Olympics, what they do is they have an inner perimeter where all outside traffic is not allowed to enter. People can walk in, but to get transportation within that inner perimeter, you have to have special security clearance. So, of course, we have that clearance, and we have the transportation that goes within that inner perimeter. And something I had never seen before, ever, was lining the streets for kilometers leading up to the rink, where people chanting. And I'm like, this is for women's hockey, right? I've never seen this before. This is a new experience for me. And I was confused by it, because I didn't understand. I was feeling pretty calm, I was good, I was ready for my game, not too nervous. But I'm confused, because I see all these people. So we asked the bus driver, like, hey, what are they chanting? Because they're chanting over and over again the same thing. And he's like, oh, they're chanting, we are one. And then my heart dropped, and I was like, oh no. This game is way more important than a hockey game. Olympics were supposed to be nonpartisan, they're not supposed to be political. This was political. So I have to laugh, and the reason why I remember this game is, for those of us who know hockey, an icing is an icing, an offside is an offside, a hand pass, we don't cheer for those things, so be it. You stop play, you move on, no big deal. Well, Korean fans, they cheer for everything. And I remember the first icing of the game, like, the roof is blown off the building, and I'm like, what is going on? But they were just so excited to be there and what it represented. And that is the memory. Those are the things that stick out in my mind when I go to these big competitions. It's the people, it's the feelings, it's the fans, it's the experiences. I remember very few calls of situations from on the ice. There are some, but very, very few. And that's what I remember from these Olympics. That sticks out in my mind. I love my experience. I wanted to go back, but I said, okay, I'm going to go for it again. I want to do two Olympics. It's never been done before by a female in North America, a female game official. So I was like, that's my goal. I am going to do 2 Olympics. So I trained for 4 years. I don't know if we forgot about that little thing called COVID. It's really hard to train for hockey as a game official when you have no hockey skates. And it was very challenging 4 years because a lot of other countries still did have hockey. So those game officials were still able to skate their games. But in Canada, we had long, vast periods of time with no hockey. So you're training, you're staying in shape, you're studying your rules, you're watching game video. But it was not an easy journey in those 4 years to get to the Beijing. Okay? But I did. I got there. I was selected November 2021. I got the phone call. And it was almost a sense of relief. Because it had been such an odd road to travel to get there. So I was relieved to actually be able to reach my goal. And relief is a bit of an odd emotion to say. Like, I should be ecstatic. I should be excited. That's exactly how I felt for my first Olympics. But I was relieved. Because it was such a hard road to get there. I got there. Because my plan was to skate to Olympics, retire from competing. I would continue to skate, but not compete, and flip into coaching officiating. So supervising, coaching. That was my plan. I had my plan. Everything was set to go. I was good to go. I don't know if you remember from the media, the Chinese government leading up to these Olympics. We had an app we had to download, and every day we had to input our medical information, including my temperature, for a month leading up to the Olympics. If you think to yourself, well, I want to have some privacy and I don't want to share my personal information with the government, that's fine. You don't go to the Olympics. The Chinese government knew everything about me. And that was the cost of wanting to go to those Olympics. So it wasn't easy. 2 weeks prior to the Olympics, I decided, I'm staying home. I can't risk getting COVID. We had emails that had COVID in December, and because the Chinese testing was so strict and so stringent, a month and a half later, they were still getting positive COVID results. They were no longer contagious. It was just the cells that were shedding on the nasal testing, but they were getting positive results. I'm like, oh man, I can't get COVID because I'm not getting into that country. So I stayed home. My husband was coming home work quite well. And pure fluke, I ended up with COVID. So 2 days prior to departure, I did my testing. You have to go down to the city. You had to go through a very specific lab to get your testing done. That was the only one that the Chinese government would allow. And I tested positive for COVID. I did not go to Beijing in 2022. And it's interesting because I had my health. I wasn't very sick with COVID, but I definitely had COVID. It wasn't a false positive. I have my health. I have my husband. I have my family. I have my job. I'm so grateful for the amazing life that I have, but this hit me in a way that was quite devastating, mentally, emotionally, and of course it has a physical impact on you. And it took me, and I would say even now, I'm probably still mentally recovering from that level of disappointment. When you compete in a sport and you have your heart set on it, all your eggs in one basket, and then it's pulled out from underneath you at the last minute, I can tell you as an athlete, it is devastating. That was devastating for me. I had a couple decisions to make. I did mourn it, and then you had the guts to pick yourself up, brush yourself off, and move on, find new opportunities, or you can stay and dwell on that. And I'm very much the type of, okay, I'm going to pick myself up. I've been sad, I've mourned it, it's time to move on. And it's funny, because when you go in with that mindset, it's amazing the opportunities that will present themselves. So in the summer of 2022, it was the first ever OHL, so the Ontario Hockey League, officiating combine. It was open to male and female. I thought, oh, why not, I'll go. I was not expecting a lot. I had very minimal expectations. I thought, this could be fun. Why not I just go try and see what it's all about? Because now we're not in the amateur route anymore. The OHL, those players feed into the NHL. Directly, or some of them into the NHL. So it's a different style of officiating. It's a different officiating world. It's a different officiating culture than anything I've ever known. And it's the male game. And I'm not scared of the male game. I know female hockey. And for those who have watched on TV, they are two different games. Many similarities. There's some differences too between the games. So I got to the camp. I was invited to a preseason game. I skated one preseason game. And from that preseason game, I was invited onto Team 21 of the OHL. So now I'm in my second season with the OHL. And it's been a very positive experience for me. I learned every game, and it's been very inclusive. I was immediately brought into that league, and I felt welcomed. Which, I'm not going to lie, as a female, I was a little bit apprehensive. I wasn't sure how that transition would go. I'm happy with my success in the league. In my first year in the league, I was invited into the first round of playoffs, so I did get to skate in the first round of playoffs. And then I left for Women's World Championship, so that ended my playoff run. But to be invited into the first round of playoffs as a first-year game official, it's quite an important thing in our world. That's something that we really, really work towards in playoffs. You get rewarded with playoffs. Not everyone gets to skate playoffs. So this has been, for me, probably next to the Olympics, one of the feathers in my cap because of what it has taught me, the opportunities that it's provided me, and the way that it continues to challenge me on the ice. And I love it. So that is what I believe came out of getting focused. So I could dwell on the fact that I go to my second Olympics, or I could move on and see what opportunities it provided me with. And had I retired, as I planned, at the end of 22, Beijing, I would have gone out for a combine. I was not undone from beneficiating now. But for some reason, life sometimes just throws your curveball and it leads you down a pathway that was meant to be, and this was meant to be for me. So. Thinking of women's hockey, Canada, USA, we have Women's Worlds coming up. TSN will give full coverage of this championship. It is right around the corner, April 3rd to 14th. It is in Utica, New York. Maybe it's not ambitious and want to go for a road trip. If not, tune in. You'll also see teams. TSN does a great job of coverage of teams that maybe you wouldn't normally watch, like Czechia or Japan. Team Japan has been in top-level women's world for many years now, representing the Asian continent in women's hockey. Very different style of game. You want to see different hockey? Watch Team Japan. You won't see many hits, but you'll see some speed and some very neat skills related to their speed and their hands. Pretty cool hockey. And that's right around the corner, as I mentioned. April 3rd to 14th. You never know, you might see a familiar face on TV. Don't yell at your TV. Actually, yell at your TV. I don't hear you. You can yell at me all you want. I don't know if you do yell at me. But that's a new opinion rule. So, I would like to end with a little bit of self-deprecating humor, because we all have those days where we're walking down the street and you trip and maybe you fall and you stumble and you're like, did anybody see that? Oh my god, I'm so embarrassed. Nobody saw. And if they did, they moved on. What I will say is when you fall and you're on national or international TV, I can guarantee that everyone saw. Let's see if this plays for us. I still have skate too, by the way. Bronze medal game at the Olympics. Oh, yeah. In our world, we owe the air for that. Oh, there's one. This one hurts. Yeah, this is OHL. Woo! Woo! There you go. Yeah, those are really good. This one I got a cheer from the crowd. Ooh! That was a bad one. And now I'm stuck. Oh no. That's a bad day at work. And then you can do the cheer. So you know what? Trust me, no one's watching, but I can honestly say people are watching when I fall. And that's everything. If you have any questions, go on, ask
me the
questions. I hope
you
enjoyed it.
Go ahead. Thanks very much. Just wondering how many people in here have ever had a white and black jersey on and done any kind of officiating. There's a few of us, as well as me. And I just wonder, we've all had a funny time, too. We've all remembered a really great funny time that everybody laughed at. Is there one that you can remember?
Gosh, that one, the last video, might be one of my more funny times. So I get knocked pretty good. That's a pretty good check into the board. So a couple stories behind that one. So first of all, nobody blew it down. Generally when a referee gets a really nasty hit or injury in a game, we blow it down. Nobody blows it down. So they come to the change room afterwards, the coaches, the officiating coaches, and they say to my one referee, why did you blow that down? Like she was actually getting her head. If you see it from the other angle, you can see my head doing this off the board.
And the record goes, well, she's a cop. She can take it. To add to that, a couple months later, and my writer friend sends me, like, she's videotaping her TV screen, and all I can hear is laughing, and then I can see the screen. I made it to TSN bloopers, 18 out of 50. I was like, should have been higher than 18. I should have been the top 5 on that. So, yeah, that one was, when you make it to the bloopers, then you know it's bad. Yeah. Thank you.
Is there any chance of ever maybe officiating in
Angela?
You get that
at that point. I get asked that a lot. And my perspective on that has changed through the year. So when I first started talking about officiating right after the 2018 Olympics, I would have said no. I honestly didn't believe that you would have female officials in the NHL. We have multiple females in the NHL, and they've been there for a couple of years now. Actually, before there were even females in the OHL, we had females in the AHL. There is a blind female, her name is Kirsten Walsh. She was plucked out of play and put right into the AHL with no officiating background. I think that she might end up eventually in the NHL. I think it's possible. Whether or not it happens, who knows? I think it's possible. We also have a couple of female referees. One is Elizabeth Manta out of Quebec. You might know the name Manta if you watch NHL. That's a hockey family within the hockey community. I could see her refereeing at that level, and another one named Sienna Leifert in Saskatchewan. I could see one of those three women potentially making it to that level. I think it's a matter of time. And then there's always the argument of, well, they're not big and strong enough. Well, on the refereeing side, so those who are calling the penalties, less of a concern. As a linesman, I will say that provides some challenges. Kirsten is quite tall, so she has the size to go into the scrums, but the scrums have changed a lot. It's not like the old days where it was a lot of bench clearing brawls or big fights all over the ice. And you get a lot of fights now. Those are rarity, and it's more of a one-on-one fight, maybe a couple other fights that are going on. But our trainer says in a fight, unless somebody is safety, if there's a safety concern, you get in there to save that player. But if not, you've chosen to fight, we'll get in there when you're tired, and then we'll separate you. So not having that 220-pound, 6-foot-4 lineman to pick up the fight, those are less common than they used to be. They still exist, though. So I would say that was a really long-winded answer, wasn't it? I think it's possible.
That's not a great problem. It's beautiful, so you don't have any problem with it.
Funny story, I broke up one recently, junior C hockey.
Yeah.
Skating in. So sick. Sailed through on my butt.
Every player's like...
Really well. So Ottawa and Montreal, Montreal is, I did a game there, and I think I had hearing damage after that game. It is Verdun Stadium, which fits just over 4,000, and it has been mostly sold out, if not sold out, for most of its games as well. They are moving their April 20th game to Bell Centre, where the Montreal Canadiens play, and I suspect that that will be, and it will break the record for Toronto, that Toronto has the record for the highest attendance for women's professional hockey. They're doing really well. It's a bit misleading when you watch in the United States because they're using really big arenas. So they're still getting their 5,000 so fans every game. And when you're watching, it looks like there's nobody in the stands. Because they use, for their leagues in the United States, unlike the Canadian centers, which run with smaller rinks, they're using really big rinks, so it looks more empty. But they're still pulling in actually really quite decent 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 fans a game.
Are you concerned, and I'm sure you will be, about money? There must be family units, Canadian working class, blue-collar family units with potential hockey players, 6'5", 6'7", who just can't afford the game anymore.
Correct.
Or is it on the increase, the decrease? How do these people get involved?
It's interesting. I don't know... I can't speak to numbers and or figures myself because I'm not aware. You're bang on in the fact that it is a very expensive sport to be involved in. I can't speak for this area, but I know the GTHL has created a lot of initiatives for under-income families to help them get involved in the sport. I don't know how much success that has had, but they're looking to reach out into those communities to create more awareness around the game and to make it more accessible. I think, though, that's going to continue to be a challenge. Renting ice alone in the city, $400 an hour, $300 an hour, depending on the arena, it is very expensive. It is a very expensive sport. So I don't have a good answer for you, but I think that you've hit on a very key issue within our sport, because they've actually seen in some male centers the attendance of players, the number of people actually participating in the game go down. We have not seen that in the women's game.
Thanks. But
they have seen that in the guys' game. Yeah. Go ahead.
Average salary of a WWHL and who's paying?
Yes, so they maxed out at $85,000 US. The lowest salary is $35,000 US. They can only have a small subset of players at the lowest salary. I don't know how many players it is. And they can only have 3 on each roster at the highest salary. It is being paid exclusively at this moment in time, until the league substantiates itself, by the owner of the Dodgers, who has the full ownership of the league and all 6 teams. So there are teams in Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, Minnesota, New York, and Boston.
All being paid by one person.
All being paid by one person. Yep, as an investment into the league.
Yeah, I was just wondering, just recently we had, as you probably might know, a coach that was fined $50,000, I believe, if someone here might correct me on these figures. And I think he got a 2-game suspension.
Mm-hmm.
How much power would you people have? And do you have people who back you?
So every league has its own policies around suspension and or if there's fines. So some leagues have fines, and I'm thinking of everything from minor hockey all the way up to the higher level leagues. And those aren't decided by game officials, that's decided by the league, and if they have a discipline board, and that's decided by them. So we just enforce the rule, and then the league will determine what is the appropriate suspension and fine.
Could you actually suspend a coach?
Can I suspend a coach? So as a lines person, no, but I can report it to my ref, who can remove them from the game. They would do a game write-up with the subsequent rule related to the offense, and then the league will decide if it is suspension. Usually they have a list of what is a suspension offense and how many games you would be suspended for. In some leagues, actually most leagues, it can be cumulative as well. So if you have a problem player who has taken multiple very dangerous safety-related penalties, I can speak specifically for the Ontario Women's Hockey Association, the suspension will get longer and longer as a consequence of their actions and being a repeat offender. But we don't decide that. We just apply the rule, and if in the rule book it is a rule where the coach or the player would be removed, the league decides what the outcome will be from there. Yeah, so John Tortorella refusing to leave the bench is a serious one in our world.
Yes.
I'll say it, it's John Tortorella at $50,000. I wasn't sure how high they would go with the fine, but considering that Toronto just had a pretty decent fine, I was like, well, they got to at least be within a range that would reflect similarly to that. It's a big fine, $50,000. Now, his owner came out and said he'd pay for it anyway.
$50,000 was a fair fine. But that doesn't happen very often. The coach won't leave.
No, because they know better. Yeah, they know. They know that the severity, that one, it's within our rules. You leave the bench when you're told to leave the bench. And he really stuck around on that bench. Like, he really hung out for a while, so he got himself in some trouble there. But we don't decide that. That's decided by the league. Go ahead.
If you really have to stop the game and have the tennis remove Houston fans,
I've done it once in my career, and it was one of the few times I was banning, and it was a girls' minor hockey game in Ottawa when I was sort of swept up my officiating, so I was banning a hockey game, and it was a referee standing at the glass yelling swear words and obscenities, and we could all hear it, and it was a very full arena because it was a tournament championship game, and at that point I did sign a fair play initiative at the minor level,
where I am to protect everyone. And even at that point, it was directed at the officiating crew. But that level, that language, the obscenities, and the verbal, I wouldn't call them threats, but the verbal harassment had crossed the line for me personally. And I said, no, you can leave. And I just said, I went to this bench that I knew that he belonged to. He's one of either a fan or a parent from that bench. And I just said, I'm not going to continue the game until you go ask that person to leave. And they did leave. So, and that's the only time I've ever done it. And it was quite vulgar. We'll say it. Well, it was quite vulgar. And I just said, no. Like, if one thing to say, oh, you're a fan yelling, you're brutal, or you suck that, like, that's part of our normal world. But what he was yelling was not okay. Yeah.
Where were you a cop? Or where are you a cop?
York Regional Police. Yeah? Yeah.
Nothing defines a strong performance on the essence for Atlantis.
Making the right call. Present. Sure. There's a certain level of. And it's different with the guys' game versus the girls' game. When I was showing in the girls' game, you're a little bit more showy in the guys' game. I appreciate differently between the two games in my style. So the right call, being a good teammate, supporting your end line partner if they get stuck or if they're in a situation where they need coverage, your ability to skate, your ability to apply the rules correctly, but ultimately can you make those split second decisions and make them consistently all the time. One, two, I'll go here first.
Have you been accepted in the Woodville hockey community when your name's not Kia or Tom Berry? Justin, you probably know, referee in the NHL.
Who's also related to Tom Berry.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who lives in Ottawa, who's a team official, is a Thornberry from the Woodville area, and I met her long before we ever knew what Woodville was.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, good question. I think you'd have to ask them. I don't actually referee minor hockey in Woodville. I don't have the ability to squeeze it into my schedule.
The we have a hockey connection with the female. Cassie Campbell's mom is from here.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
Yes, we went to high school with you. She was her mom, and she lives here, but when after she got married, she moved to Mississauga.
Okay.
But she's back here all the time, so we have a connection with the female.
That's awesome.
To our area. The question is, are you thinking of her pursuing refereeing?
To compete in it? No. At this point, I don't want to give away my age, but the officiating world, I'm kind of old. I know you laugh, but it's true. It's true. Yeah, I'm going to find one, I guess I would say. But to split into the officiating and the refereeing, knowing how long that journey takes, it might be expedited a little bit because my name is already out there. However, no. Do I want to do more of it? Especially, like, I go down to Oshawa and I'll do the U16, U18 ship playing bandit to get that experience. But mostly I do that. So would I like to referee a bit more? Yes. So that way when I retire and I coach, it's one thing to go in and tell the referee to do something as feedback. It's another thing when you've experienced it yourself. Right? So I do it for that purpose. That's the biggest reason for my commitment right now. So I do want to continue challenging myself on that side, but as long as I'm competing, I'm just going to stay on the line. So.
Could you say a few words about women's college hockey?
So in Canada, we don't have a lot of women's college. We have a lot of women's universities. This past weekend, we actually had the finals, the McCall Cup finals, and it was against the University of Toronto and Waterloo, and it was hosted at Varsity Stadium in Toronto. This is good hockey. So, if you're able and you want to tune in, you might have to go a little hunting to find this hockey. This week is U Sport Nationals. This is our top women's university from Canada. That starts on Thursday. They have two games on Thursday that will go till Sunday. This is good hockey. Especially when it gets to that level, it is fast, it is good, it is very skilled hockey. I had the pleasure of getting to skate in U Sport Nationals last year, and it's been a long time since I've been at a national championship. And it was night and day from my previous youth sports, which is probably going back to 2013, so almost 10 years. The hockey had improved drastically. So really good hockey, and it's affordable. So the closest team to our area would probably be Ontario Tech. Peterborough does not have a women's hockey team. Very affordable hockey. You can go out and watch some decent hockey. You're not having to deal with the parking and the high cost of the Maple Leafs, but it's very affordable and it's good hockey to watch. Great question, thank you. I put my hand over here before I come back this way. I know I had seen some hands coming up over here earlier.
I was wondering, what I find annoying, but hockey is the TV replays where, and eventually it works out the narrow side by a fraction of an inch. Mm-hmm. How do referees and linemen view that sort of replay stuff? I think it'd be annoying.
I can only speak for myself, and I can only speak for the offside. I like it. Yeah, and here's why, because when you are dealing, especially with, and I won't get into all the different rules, but let's say a hybrid icing with an offside, the game is very fast. And you're right, there are some offsides that are mere inches. They're even impossible to call. They're really, really hard to call when they're that close. So generally you'll have multiple players hitting the line at the same time. So you're looking at multiple depths with multiple varying levels of speed, watching where their foot is and where the puck is. So when the call is that close, I would rather the right call be made. So if I make the wrong call and it's reviewed and they say, because generally when it goes to review, very seldom is it offside by like it's offside by a shorter amount, like something small. Even a foot might look like a lot when it's slowed down, but in real time that can be a very difficult call to make. I'd rather the right call be made because those only get reviewed when they lead to a goal. So for me, I like it myself because then I know that if I had impacted the game, because when I make a mistake and I can't fix it, I dwell on it. I can dwell on it for days and or weeks. So I would rather they just fix the mistake then and there. I can take ownership. We move on. The right call is made. Yeah, it makes me feel a lot better.
I'm not going to be annoyed anymore.
When it takes a really long time, be annoyed, because we get annoyed too. So when there's a review and it's taking 3, 4, 5 minutes instead of a minute or two, that's even we get told to keep the reviews as short as possible. Sometimes it's the technology, and because we're communicating to someone, it's that communication in between of being able to see what it is that we want them to show us that causes the delay. So when it gets to be a longer review, you can be a little annoyed. I'll give you that one.
Who rates the efficiency of an official?
The coaches.
Yeah. Is that official? Put in a report.
Yeah, so I'll use the IHF as my standard. I'll use that as an example. I get a report card at the end of the championship, and the report card has everything from that championship, my strengths, my areas of things that I need to work on, my weaknesses, and whether or not they recommend me to another championship, and what was done well, what they appreciated seeing from me in that championship, or what was not done well. And those are written up by the coaches who are at that championship, and it's an official document that they use for making decisions for future world events and the Olympics.
The NHL, is it per game?
I don't know if the NHL.
I see.
Yeah. I don't have a background in the NHL, and I don't have a very strong connection to it, especially being so new to male hockey. So how they function behind the scenes, as far as selection of game officials, I can't speak to. Yeah.
Thank you. I've always preferred the female game of hockey to the male game of hockey simply because in the OEK they start to encourage the referees to control the pace of the game.
Okay.
Is that going to happen in female hockey?
Explain to me what you mean by how the officials
make the call.
How many penalties do
they make? I always want to speak of between the first period and the third period in the NHL.
What we are always told is that safety and fairness, safety and fairness, safety and fairness. Safety penalties, we are told they want to be called all the time because they are safety penalties. And fairness penalties are when it impacts the fairness of the game. So we, on the female side, I have never received direction as to, now we stop calling so many penalties off. We need you to call a little bit more. This TV tonight, so we wanted to have this type of game. I've never heard of that happening elsewhere, although it's often communicated through the media that it does happen. So in my experience, we've never been told that in the women's game. We've certainly never been told that at the IHF level.
The OHA is sort of like, you want the next game, you don't want
the next game. Okay. And I've never received that information in the OHA either. I've never heard it in the change rooms. I do officiate the OHA as well. And I've never heard that being communicated in the OHA. So I can't speak to other people's observations or anything that they have experienced, but I have not experienced that myself.
You get hit by a lot of pucks.
In the OHA, I do. No, I'm just joking.
Depends on the level. The higher the level, the less pucks you get hit with. Yeah. The higher level, they are so well controlled and they play such a heads up game. So when I go to a girl or a guy's minor hockey game, like they'll be able to take a look. I'm right here, take a look. We do what's called facing race. So you want to get in between the legs, the boards, and the outside. So you're trying to give them as many options as possible. On the lines, we are very stuck to our position. There's not a lot of the referee can move a lot more. They've got a lot more areas they can move. On the lines, you need to stand here and maybe you can move a little this way, a little that way. So we get stuck in a spot and we can't really move that well because we need to be in our position to make the calls that we need to make. So at the lower level, yes, I get to try a lot of calls. At the higher levels, I find not so much. Male and female, at the high levels, you really rarely get hit by a puck because they don't just put their head down and shoot. They're always looking towards the next play. So they're much more aware of even our positioning on the ice.
Thank you. Can take one more question. Okay. Is there any difference in the philosophy of refereeing between the regular season and playoff hockey?
Yes. Yeah. It's a more intense game, so you may have a little bit more tolerance for the emotions in the playoffs, recognizing that it is a very intense game. And culturally in hockey, we allow for a lot of emotion, a lot. So you have to allow that. You gotta kind of meet people where they're at. You know they're going to be more emotional in the playoffs, and you're going to have to work through that and do your best to communicate with those people. Whereas earlier in the season, if you see that level of emotion, you might be more quick to say, hey, you know what? Maybe you've crossed the line at this point because we don't want to start out up here, right? For playoffs, like even myself, when players talk to me, I'm like, oh, let me know, and I might have more words for you. But right now, I'm just going to talk to you calmly and calm things down because I know you're very emotional about what's going on in the game.
Well, I think that's the whole question.
We're looking for the NHL inside scoop over here, and I don't know. I can't give you the inside scoop on the NHL.
Well, my mother, as a teenager, bought Cajun to play hockey, but she had to keep a secret from her parents, and she wouldn't be allowed to go.
And yet not changed that much, because 5 years ago one of our female officials was pregnant and she kept it hidden until she got her next Women's World Championship because she knew that her name would not be put forward by our national body if she was pregnant. So she hid it, had the child, and when the child was 3 months old and she got her Women's World, she's like, oh yeah, by the way, I have a 3 month old. And so that was only 5 years ago. That has since changed. But that was only 5 years ago. We had a female game official who can't be pregnant. So we still have some work to do.